Welcome to Face to Face, the space where we devote time to analysis and discussion of the major issues of the day, both here in Spain and on the international stage. Our guests this week are a British couple who have travelled half the world, spanning four continents between them, Europe, Asia, Africa and the Americas, teaching English. Annie MacDonald and Mark Hancock now live in Madrid, where they write English language teaching materials, which are published by some of the most prestigious names in the business, Cambridge University Press and Oxford University Press, to mention but two.
Perhaps their best-known work is English Result, published by OUP, but you can get more information on this and their other books by going to their website, www.hancockmacdonald.com. That's Hancock, ending in CK, and MacDonald, starting with an M and a small C.
To find out about how one goes about creating English language learning materials, we have them here in the studio with us. Annie MacDonald, Mark Hancock, welcome to Face to Face, and thank you very much for coming in. You've been English language teachers for most of your professional lives, and I don't think people know really what that involves, but speaking from experience, it isn't really an easy job to do, is it, Annie?
No, it isn't. It takes you a long time to train up. I mean, you can start by thinking that because you know your own language, you dominate it, then it must be very easy to go into the classroom and teach it. But as soon as you walk into the classroom and meet a group of students, you'll soon find out, much to your horror, that that is not the case at all.
Mark?
Yeah, I actually started teaching in Sudan and I had no training at the time. It was a class full of 40 kids and I had no idea what I was doing, so when I came back from that year, I was determined to learn a bit about how to do this.
So, I mean, most people think it's just a question of shoving vocabulary in front of kids, getting them to learn it by rote, teaching them a few tenses of verbs. But that isn't really what it's all about, is it?
I would say not, because what you've mentioned there, Frank, is really kind of talking about the rules of language, knowing about the rules of language. Perhaps what's more important and more difficult is being able to use it. Because many students who've learnt the language the old way, should we say, can sit down and fill in blanks. But as soon as they go into an English-speaking environment, for example, they won't be able to order a cup of coffee.
Well, a bit like Spanish ministers when they go to Brussels. But anyway, that's another matter. Mark, you mentioned there Sudan, but you've also, both of you, travelled around the world teaching. You've lived in Turkey, in Brazil, and are now here in Spain. Which country do you remember most fondly? Well, you remember in the case of Spain, you're here. But which country would you say you were happiest?
Well, happy is a difficult one because there's lots of different ways of being happy. Turkey sticks in the mind because that's where I met Annie, and we've been together since that.
Oh, nice.
And then the Brazil, that was really a pilgrimage to the capital of music. It's my favourite kind of music, and being there was a real treat. And then coming to Spain, well, I've been here for so long, it doesn't really compare with the others anymore.
Now, is it possible to compare learning skills among these different countries, or between any different countries? But who's better at learning languages, would you think? The Turks, the Brazilians, or the Spaniards? Annie?
Well, I wouldn't like to make any comparison at all.
How diplomatic.
Well, no, Frank, but simply because I believe it's a matter of individual learning styles. And a lot of people say, oh, I'm terrible at learning languages, or make very, very general statements like, oh, the Spanish are bad at learning languages. And I wonder what they mean by that. Is it that they themselves don't know many people, Spanish people, for example, who don't speak the language? And, of course, that's changing now.
Well, I'm going to be absolutely clear on this one, because I have a very strong personal opinion that Spaniards and the British are the two worst peoples for learning languages. Mark, is there some element of truth in
that? Can I just defend the British and say it's very difficult for a British person to practice another language. If you go to, for example, Spain, Poland, wherever it might be, and try to practice, they'll speak back to you in English.
Yeah.
So you just don't get a chance.
Well, I mean, Spaniards too, they speak a universal language. I mean, I don't suppose if you went to Britain as a Spaniard, you'd get many people speaking Spanish back to you. But certainly if you go to the United States, the chances are, as a Spaniard, you will meet a lot of people speaking Spanish. Is it a question of empire? I mean, are these the two big languages at the moment of the world, excluding Chinese, but that's a kind of closed book at the moment? Is it because most people in the world speak either English or Spanish, that people here, and perhaps in Britain too, don't feel the need, as say a Dutchman would, to learn other languages?
Yeah, I think you've got the nail on the head there. It's a question of necessity. The more you need to learn, the more effectively you will learn.
Or the more you want to learn as well, because with the internet and global communication now, I think there are a lot of people who want to learn as well as need to learn.
Annie, you once had to teach Spanish air traffic controllers.
That's right, yes.
Because, of course, they have to use English in their jobs. That's a life and death kind of a situation, I would think, or responsibility as their teacher, giving orders to the airplanes to land and take off. I know a Spanish air traffic controller, and it's a tremendous responsibility. How conscious were you that if your language students didn't learn correctly, disaster could follow?
Well, I think yes. I think when you're teaching trainee air traffic controllers, because they were actually trainee air traffic controllers, and I was teaching them radio telephony, the language of the skies, which meant, first of all, I had to learn how to be an air traffic controller, in effect.
Were you any good?
Nobody let me in a plane. Nobody gave me a go.
But didn't you do simulation flights?
No, I never went into the simulator even. But, you know, the language of air traffic controllers has been designed, if designed is the right word, in such a way as to eradicate any possibility for ambiguity. And precisely because of the life and death nature of the situation. And so if I can just give you an example. In radio telephony, if a controller wants to give a pilot an instruction to climb to a certain level, let's say to level 250, what they would instruct them to do would be climb flight level 250. Now, if you insert another 2 in there, or you drop the words flight level... Yes, it could indeed be a frightening situation because it would be ambiguous. You wouldn't know whether or not, the pilot wouldn't know whether or not he or she was to climb to a certain flight level or to 250.
Tremendously complex. The possibility for error is infinite.
It is. But one thing we should bear in mind, people who are involved in language teaching and training in the aviation industry often believe that, you know, language is crucial for safety purposes. It is. But there have been very few accidents or incidents where language has been the sole contributing factor.
Yeah.
Okay. There's normally something else going on, bad weather or technical problems. And it's that kind of the edgy situation that might make somebody might cause a language slip.
Yeah.
And so,
Mark, after so many years of teaching languages, both of you are now writing books about language. In fact, I've got one of your latest books, which you tell me came out today, English Pronunciation in Use by the Cambridge University Press. Well, first of all, you know, you're from Manchester and Annie's from Liverpool. What does a Mancunian and a Liverpudlian have to tell us about English pronunciation? What kind of English pronunciation are we talking about?
You don't need to be too precise when you're talking about pronunciation, otherwise you're just going to teach your students to be able to communicate in one city or one part of the world. You need to get what is generalizable across the various varieties of English. That's what you need to be teaching.
But it must be difficult to get American English, Canadian English, New Zealand English, Australian English, Indian English, Pakistani English, Northern English, Southern English, Scottish English, Irish English, all into one sort of package, no?
I think you're even forgetting some other kinds of English. Yes. Spanish English, for example.
But that would be a genuine English pronunciation, would it? Spanish English?
Yes. It's one of the international varieties of English. But the point is that there's a lot all of those have in common, as well as that differentiates them. We, as native speakers of the language, notice the differences very strongly. But they have a lot more in common than you might imagine, and that's that you have to go for.
Now, the other thing I know about you, Mark, is that you go to extraordinary lengths to try to be creative in your teaching methods. You've even written a book on how to learn English using music, combining your two great loves, teaching English and playing music. Getting your students to sing along to improve their command of the English language. Now, how did that come about?
Music has always been my hobby, and it's an obvious thing to do because it gives the students oral practice. Apart from speaking, speaking's obviously great, but you've got to learn to get your mouth around the new sounds, and for that, having something as scripted as a song is excellent. And another thing is that the melody sticks in your head, so once you've learnt something through a song, you never forget it. You've had that experience when you can't get a song out of your head, even if you want to.
Yeah. But we're not talking here about yellow matter custard dripping down a dead dog's eye. We're not talking about Beatles songs. We're actually talking about songs that you yourself have composed.
That's the thing about authentic songs, which weren't written for English teaching, is that they often too difficult for beginning level students. So that's why I started writing songs for English teaching, simply to make them more useful in terms of the language that you can get out of them.
Could you play us